how you live and how you even understand the universe in which you live has been dictated to our governments by people you and I have never heard of, people we didn't elect and can't remove.
The politicians aren't even involved in governing their own societies any longer. So you're in a place that is utterly dominated by the United States and, let's say, the World Economic Forum and probably less so in the Bilderberg Group, which are all the same.
It's disturbing enough to realize that our elected governments can be dictated to by the 1%, the billionaire class. How much more disturbing would it be to discover that certain diktats are not coming from the billionaire class, but are coming from beings you and I have never heard of? Are we in an age of disclosure, or still in the fog of a cover-up? Are conversations about our planet and the future of humanity being held at a covert government level, conducted by parties and guided by information, carefully kept from the general public?
Do we have the bodies of the pilots who piloted this craft?
Biologics came with some of these recoveries, yeah.
Were they, I guess, human or non-human biologics?
Non-human, and that was the assessment of people with direct knowledge on the program I talked to that are currently still on the program.
Was anything described as that we have possession of bodies?
Yes, yes.
We have is it multiple types of creatures or?
Sir, I couldn't answer that. I can tell you anecdotally that it was discussed quite a bit when I was at the Pentagon. The problem is the supposed collection of these biological samples occurred before my time, in fact, before I was even born.
Non-human intelligence has been interacting with humanity. This interaction is not new, and it's been ongoing. And there are unelected people in the government that are aware of that.
If statements made by authoritative witnesses were to prove true concerning current ET contact, what are the implications? Commentators including Colonel Carl Nell and Australian journalist Ross Coulthard warn of impending ontological shock. Ontological shock? What's that? For an illustration, think about the lion. Now, the lion is the alpha species, the alpha predator of the African savanna. It knows how to move through the savanna as the alpha species. It knows how to organize its life, how to socialize, how to protect territory, how to hunt, how to feed, how to raise its pride as the alpha species. But imagine that from out of the blue, we now introduce a new species to the savanna, a species the lion has never seen, a species so superior in power to the lion that it's hardly worth comparing them, a species that the lion cannot possibly understand, say something like a T-Rex. How does the lion live then, when all of a sudden it's having to look over its shoulder because there are T-Rexes scattered through the savannah? The lion doesn't know how to navigate that territory anymore. It knows how to be the alpha predator. Now that there are T-Rexes out there, it doesn't know how to be a lion anymore. That's ontological shock. What would it mean for us as human beings to suddenly understand ourselves not as our planet's alpha species, but as a lower or mid-ranking species in a populated cosmos? Would such a realization change how we organize human life, how we live and work and raise our families? How would it alter our attitude towards our religions and political leaders? I think there's a whole package of questions here. How will people relate to our political and religious leaders if suddenly they realize that rather than being represented by elected governments, they have in fact been managed and manipulated by a covert cadre of leaders who have kept secret information about who and what the human race really is. information about what technology is available that might improve and even transform the human condition. So there's certainly a question of public trust. I mean, imagine if you were to find out that every 4 years you've been casting your vote, your parents cast their votes, your grandparents cast their votes, thinking you were electing governments that would make decisions on your behalf and represent your interests in Parliament, only to discover that these elected governments are in fact not the alpha in the picture, and that how you live and how you even understand the universe in which you live has been dictated to our governments by people you and I have never heard of, people we didn't elect and can't remove, people with no fellow feeling towards you or me or to any human being. It's disturbing enough to realize that our elected governments can be dictated to by the 1%, the billionaire class.
The politicians aren't even involved in governing their own societies any longer. Who really believes this? You're in Australia, you know, you're in a place that is utterly dominated by the United States and, let's say, the World Economic Forum, and probably less so in the Bilderberg Group, which are all the same. That's who runs your country. That's who runs my country. The politicians don't have any control over their own countries, and they certainly don't have information or control over this very, very sensitive subject.
How much more disturbing would it be to discover that certain diktats are not coming from the uber wealthy, the billionaire class, but are coming from beings you and I have never heard of? That's public distrust and ontological shock all rolled together. As images and documents are released from the files of US military intelligence, is there a danger of stoking the flames of public distrust and ontological shock? Are certain commentators correct when they suggest that we may be staring down the barrel of catastrophic disclosure? Catastrophic disclosure has two elements. And the first is the scenario of something happening that is so visible, so undeniable, that people all around the world would suddenly be confronted with the reality that we are in contact with advanced non-human civilizations. That would be catastrophic disclosure. The other aspect of catastrophic disclosure is control. If we didn't control the disclosure, then it is considered catastrophic. So, for instance, if beings from Zeta Reticuli were to land in Central Park or on the White House lawn or on the Champs-Élysées, if the Indian Prime Minister or the Chinese President were to step up to the podium flanked by ambassadors from Sirius C or the Pleiades, that would be considered catastrophic disclosure. My view is that what has been released in these first four tranches of files declassified by US military intelligence is not so much about informing the public as giving the general public time to process the ideas of contact, to come to terms with it before the reality of it becomes undeniable. We haven't been shown the entire craft, the non-human biologics, the pilots, the metamaterials, whose existence was revealed 3 years ago in the Congressional House Oversight Subcommittee hearing of July 26th. We haven't been shown the high-resolution video or high-resolution images that's in the possession of US military intelligence on CIPA, on their secret databases. The documents that are being released, the old grainy video footage that we're being shown, this is soft disclosure, because the calculation is always, what can the public handle? The books of the Eden series argue that this is not the first time that our governments and religious institutions have had to wrestle with this question. Ancient narratives around the world place humanity as a mid-ranking species in a populated cosmos. I argue that if our distant ancestors could get their heads around that, so can we. The idea of human elites governing on behalf of a non-human demographic can be found in the Mayan carvings of the Jaguar dynasty in the Yucatan. In the Edo and Yoruba stories out of Nigeria, Benin, and Cameroon. In the narratives of the Oba and Ojiso. In the ancient Sumerian stories of the kings, the Dinjir, and the crossover king, King Gilgamesh. The Dragons of Eden argues that the same story can be found embedded in the language of the Hebrew scriptures, in the stories of Yahweh, King Saul, and King David. My perspective is that if our African ancestors, our Mesopotamian ancestors, our Mayan ancestors, our Hebrew ancestors could get their heads around these ideas, then so can we. Traditional cultures all around the world have preserved written, carved, and oral traditions describing how our distant ancestors interacted with beings from other worlds. Some, like the Babylonian Enuma Elish and Atrahasis epics, tell stories of occupation and adaptation by advanced visitors. Together with the Mayan and Hebrew stories, they describe our ancestors being engineered and exploited by non-human elites. The history of Babylonia, written by the Greek Babylonian priest Berossus in the 3rd century BCE, argues that this interaction was the spark that catalyzed the dawn of civilization. The history of Babylon says that human beings were originally moved off the land where they had been happily living in a subsistence lifestyle and herded into cities to be managed there by a non-human elite called the Apkallu. According to Berossus, all the accoutrements of civilization were gifted to humanity by non-human others. And it was a huge leap forward in terms of concentrated living, a specialized society, which enabled us to leap forward in arts, sciences, technology, medicine. It was a massive increase in the standard of living for human beings. The Book of Enoch, in the wider canon of the Bible, describes the same moment, referenced briefly in Genesis 6. Enoch described it as a period of rich cultural exchange, teaching our ancestors astronomy, medicine, metal technology, and introducing textiles and cosmetics. Berossus and Enoch present this interaction as a huge leap forward in the human experience. The standard of living for ordinary people went from here to here because of this golden age where we co-occupied the planet with galactic neighbors. Yet these ancient narratives have a shadow side too. In the Eden Conspiracy, I show that the Hebrew scriptures warn about the dangers of old powers, covert government, what today we would call the deep state. In the Invasion of Eden, I show that the ideas of money, perpetual debt through taxation, the loss of land ownership, contract law, legal and police systems were all introduced by a non-human elite to teach human leaders levers of control by which they could manage large and dense populations of people. Berossus saw this as a win-win. It was a win for the elites, enabling them to govern large populations and create the city-state. And it was a win for ordinary people because their standard of living had been transformed. Yes, there were means of management and means of control. But since the people were so much more prosperous than they had been before, Berossus saw this as a good thing. And the Babylonians were not the only ancient culture who saw it that way. Every year, I take a group on tour with me to the Van and Bitlis provinces of Turkey to live excavations at unique archaeological sites. And together we examine inscriptions, carvings, and artifacts of the Urartian culture, the Iron Age Biennale people. Their stories also look back on the period of contact described by Berossus, remembering it as a golden age. And their cultural memory is that their ancestors thrived in this period of open contact and technology sharing. And in fact, their sacred sites and their ceremonies and the details of their inscriptions suggest that they longed for the return of these advanced non-human others. They longed for another age of cohabitation and technology sharing, because they believed that would usher in even greater advances in human civilization. Our ancestors were not naive about what contact looks like when it's conducted behind closed doors. They talked about covert government. They talked about the dangers of the deep state. They talked about the dangers of unaccountable powers. They talked about the dangers of elites having different technology to the normal people. And they warn about patterns of dispossession and exploitation. So they're not naive about what other visiting demographics might be interested in. They present a spectrum of experiences from the deep past, experiences of contact, colonization, exploitation, but also stories of nurture and support from friends in high places. Traditional cultures curated shamanic protocols in the hope of connecting ordinary people with their cosmic helpers. The Dingir of the ancient Sumerians, the Abkalu of the Babylonians, the feathered serpents of the Maya, the guides of Plato and the Greek mystics. My work encourages people to learn about these ancient shamanic protocols and to learn our ancestral narratives from around the world. I believe our ancestors bequeathed us these stories to help us prepare for another era of contact. They left us these stories to help us manage and process the idea that we might be a mid-ranking species in a populated cosmos, to begin to think about what contact with a whole kaleidoscope of visitors might mean. These stories are there to help us avoid catastrophic disclosure and ontological shock. My research has convinced me that through these stories that we can find in oral tradition, carvings, inscriptions, ancient texts, our ancestors have primed us and prepared us to be ready for disclosure. I've made a free module available for you from Ancient Knowledge Academy, where we begin to look again at the ancient words of the Bible, and especially the language of Elohim and Yahweh and the other mysterious beings whose presence is often hidden by conventional translations. If you've ever wondered what the texts are really describing, then follow the link, watch the free module, and take your first steps inside Ancient Knowledge Academy. At the Academy, we find ways of bringing ancient and ancestral story to bear on our own worldview. If you're on a journey of reframing faith or old beliefs or reframing your worldview to get a deeper understanding of who we really are, what our history tells us as a human species, what our potential is, then you will enjoy the topics we explore at Ancient Knowledge Academy. We look at ancient civilizations and ancient texts. We consider lost time and study how belief systems can shape perception. Without panic, without dogma, and with an open mind to continue in our journey of exploration. And if you'd like to stand in the landscape where so many of these origin stories converge, the lands around Lake Van, the lands of modern Turkey and ancient Armenia, the place many traditions point to as the reboot of civilization, I take a group there every year, because standing in the place itself is very different to reading a story. If you'd like to join me in the Van province, go to ancientknowledgetours.com. And if you'd like to continue a journey with an online learning community, come to ancientknowledgeacademy.com. Wherever you are in your journey, whether you're just curious or if you're redefining how you understand humanity, you are very welcome to continue your exploration with me.